Welcome everybody to Quill and Query. Welcome everybody to the Quill and Query podcast. I am Brandon Hall, joined by my wonderful co-host as always, Ash. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. Same.
Glad to be here. The highlight of my Tuesdays every week.
Yeah, me too. We have a lot of fun topics to talk about today. Maybe a couple not so fun topics, but equally important ones as well. So, we hope you will stick around and enjoy the show. And if you have any feedback for us, as always, chat is right there. So let us know. Sometimes I miss it, but I'll see it eventually. Oops, I forgot to scroll to the top of our doc here. But before we get into all our fun topics for the day, I know we talked a little bit about exploring this segment a little more. So I'm going to ask you not only what are you reading, but I guess, what are your thoughts on your current read? Do you have anything you want to share with the audience about what you're currently reading?
Yeah, so I finished Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow for book club last week. Gave it an excellent 4 stars. Mm-hmm. So that was nice to complete. And I'm now about a third of the way through B.E. Schwab's The Fragile Threads of Power, which is the first book of her second trilogy based on the Shades of Magic series. I am loving it. It's always fun to dive back into a world that you adored. And because this is set 7 years after the end of the last book, the characters that I loved have aged with me. So it feels really cool and unique. And then a few new characters added in to kind of expand the plot line and make things a little bit more higher stakes. B.E. Schwab is a great at world building, and this is a very like plot heavy book with a lot of additional expounded world building. So I'm just eating it up. So that's what I'm reading.
Very cool. Yeah. She's still on my TBR, B.E. Schwab. I want to get to her stuff eventually.
I think you'll like her.
I don't have the experience of diving back into a world with A Song of Ice and Fire, unfortunately, but mm-hmm. I imagine it's a, has it been 7 years, like I think you said 7 years, was that in book time or is that real world time?
Book time. Yeah, I think it's been about 5 years since the last novel came out, and don't hold me to that, but it's been quite a good chunk of time. She's had a few other projects in between, so she took a break and then came back to it. So yeah, it's been fun. Yeah,
very cool. Well, I'm still reading the same books, but I'm making good progress. I'm about a little more than halfway through the second book of the First Law trilogy, Before They Are Hanged. Still really love it. It's definitely Joe Abercrombie's, you know, trademark style. If you don't like it, you're not going to like book two. Like, if you didn't like book one, you're not going to like book two. But it's
right.
He splits his books into part one and part two. I know a lot of authors do that. And it still feels like book, I don't know if have you read First Law?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, book one is very slow going. It almost feels like an extended prologue is the best way I can describe it, like the entire book. But for a while there, when I was reading book one, I was like, I really don't see where this is going. It's fun. I just, I don't really see the trajectory for the characters. And then by the time you get to the end, it's like, oh, okay, this is where we're going. So it takes a while to get there, but it clicks and it feels really good. I feel like part one of book two was kind of the same, where it felt like it was just kind of stalling for a little bit until you get to the end and you're like, oh, okay, the wait was kind of worth it.
That stall doesn't discourage you at all from reading? Like, that doesn't like bore you or?
I want to say because I know how he handled it in the first book, I'm more inclined to trust him in the second and then probably even the third. Now, if book one didn't stick the landing, I don't think I would be here giving it a second chance, giving that style a second chance in book two, because I think it's very much dependent on the execution of that ending. Because as a reader, you kind of have to trust that it's gonna go somewhere, and it's gonna, all that time is gonna feel like rewarded.
So putting in the work.
Yeah, but no, it can. I think in book one is where I felt a little bit discouraged at a certain point. I was like, okay, I'm 300 pages in, and I don't really know what's going on. Like, it just feels kind of like day to day stuff. I don't really see why is this an important story to tell? But it definitely answers that question by the end of the book, I feel like. So I
That's
think
good.
knowing how he handles it makes me more open to that. But yeah, those are my thoughts on book two of
Nice.
First Law. It's weird
First
because
one.
when I sell him, like when you're trying to pitch him to other readers, it's like, oh, he's a faster George R. R. Martin because he a lot less pages, but he's still kind of slow. I don't know how to, it's like fast but slow.
Interesting.
It's weird. Yeah.
That seems to be like maybe a more like, because I'm assuming First Law, right? That's the name of the book.
Or it's
Yeah,
the
I'm
name of
assuming it's like a high.
the series, but
Oh, I see.
yeah.
It's more a high fantasy, right? Or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, it I would say very Martin-esque, where the magic is kind of not really at the forefront yet, but it's like more and more as you read. So,
Sure.
and it's still very mysterious, and I would say softer magic, not like Brandon Sanderson or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I just wondered that the style, I wonder if because it's like a little less on the magic side that the kind of like world building happens in those smaller moments, so it seems like they take longer in between important plot points, because
Yeah.
maybe that's just like a style you like too. Because I do feel like sometimes if it is, I feel that way with Brandon Sanderson sometimes. I'm just kind of like, okay, like this is a lot of work, and what's the
Yeah.
payoff? And usually it's good, but there can be like a little too much. So yeah, it seems like to be an older style of fantasy writing that you don't really see that often anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it might just be subconsciously something that I enjoy.
Yeah, we all have it.
Before we get into our topics too, I also have some podcast updates. Quill and Query is now up on Apple Podcasts, finally. And I just wanted to say I would greatly appreciate any reviews or ratings anyone can leave on any of the podcast platforms. I don't care which ones. And obviously, you don't have to. It's just a nice little boost for the algorithm. I know on these podcast platforms, reviews help a lot with visibility. So if you enjoy the show, we would really like to know on those platforms, specifically in their review section. But yeah, that's all I have. I'm still working on YouTube. There's a weird thing with my phone number and my YouTube account not being connected that's
Oh no.
causing a problem, but I'll get it figured out.
Classic.
Worst case, I'll just have to manually, because it has RSS has automatic YouTube uploads, and that's what I've been trying to do just to get it out faster. But I might just end up having to do manual, like put it in a video with a looping background of some kind, and it'll just
Sure.
take a little longer, but
Okay.
we will definitely get it
Those are
up
good updates.
on YouTube. And also, you reminded me of these just a little bit ago, but we have some audience questions from our friend Mandy, from last week that we unfortunately couldn't answer on the show because they required a little bit more research. But hopefully, she will see this and we can give her some helpful answers to her questions. I'll read the first one. So Mandy asks, I heard that publishers are desperately looking for large social followings. What role do you think this plays in publishing or getting picked up by a publisher? So I've been talking for a few minutes, Ash, so I'm gonna let you talk so I can breathe a little bit. But what do you think about Mandy's question?
Well, I thought it was a really good question, and I think it came on the end of something that I had mentioned when I was at that writers conference that I keep bringing up like every episode, but only
Yeah.
because it had some really great insight and value. So the speaker said that most publishers, at least in like the larger scale, don't actually care about social followings. When you query or when you are writing about your book, usually there is a bio, and someone asks, is it helpful to have your listing of your social media accounts? Like, I have so many followers on Instagram, I have so many followers on TikTok. And he goes, you can put it in there, but at the end of the day, that's not going to sell a book to publishers. And again, please take this with a grain of salt. This is just one person's opinion. But I do think that as TikTok and Instagram start to really come up and give rise to indie authors that then eventually get picked up by publishers because of their following and how much fan love they get from their own, organic, their own organic following, it's contending with the traditional publisher of you don't need to be anybody, which kind of makes me feel great because I don't have a huge following and I'm not the biggest social media person, even though I am addicted to it. I'm not creating content as often as I could be or should be in order to be someone that stands out. So, on one hand, it's nice to know that you don't need a huge following, at least from this gentleman's perspective, because publishers care about whether or not your book can sell. I think where we are seeing the shift is people like Danielle Jensen and Olivia Blake, who do have popular followings and then get picked up later. And it's becoming more and more of a thing, though still kind of rare. I think there are pluses and minuses to both. Like I said, it's nice to go in knowing that your book can get picked up and just on its own merit, have success because of that. I feel like if I had a huge social media following and my book got picked up, one, it's already a built-in kind of market for me to sell books. But at the same time, it's like, are you just picking me because you know my books are going to sell to the 80,000 people who I, know follow me, versus not? I think social media can be a dangerous game too. What you say and how you say it, if you don't have a publicist and you're just kind of making your own content and going off the cuff, can be detrimental in some aspects, especially if you get into trouble for what you say, regardless of what you say or whether or not it's good or bad or ugly. That can be a fine line to walk if you're not someone who's like a classically social media trained person. So I think it can play a really good role, especially if you're someone who like makes it your full-time job to market yourself and your work. I do think though that there are downsides, and I'm not sure what that indicates for the larger publishing world. I'm gonna go in whenever I push my book. I probably won't mention my social media following. I don't think that really, that's not why I'm writing the book. So I, to me, it doesn't play an essential part, but to some people it does. So those are my thoughts.
Well, I have a follow-up question for you because I know you've talked to an agent, right? Kind of about this. That's okay. I have not, so I just want to pose another question to you. Does it, and tell me if I'm understanding what you said correctly. It sounds like it has the potential to be a positive if you have a large social media following, but it's like it's not required. It's not like they're looking for that, and that's a condition on which they'll publish you. Like, yeah, I'm sure they'd be happy with it because more sales, but ultimately, like, that's not the first thing they're looking for.
So I also want to be clear with that follow-up question that when we're talking about publishers, I'm not talking about agents. So agents, I think, is a different beast. You usually have an agent to help navigate the publishing world for you. And whether or not your agent chooses to use your social media following as a kind of tool for negotiation is I think separate. I think what we're talking about just publishers. If you were to go straight to the publisher and pitch your book is what I'm kind of talking
Oh,
about,
okay, gotcha.
where it's not necessary. It is not a requirement, nor is it really on the rubric for whether or not this is going to be a successful novel. So they're looking at the book and your manuscript rather than who you are as a person. Of course, I'm sure general searches go out when they're looking to see who you are as a person, but that's not the number one factor that's going to get you published.
I think that's a comforting thought to know that you don't need to be, you know, a massive
God,
influencer.
imagine.
Yeah, that would, I mean, I love book talk, but it's, I feel like it would be a lot more daunting to, you know, anyone who wants to get into the writing space that, okay, now here's a new, not only do you need to write a good book, but now you need to be a social media expert as well, and know how to leverage that.
Definitely.
I think that would.
I also think I like look at my people who I do follow who are big authors, and like aside from Brandon Sanderson, who plays the social media game really well, he's very in tune and very like he's got a good balance. I think most of the people I follow, like Holly Black and even V.E. Schwab, V.E.'s pretty active, but it's all about like writer's advice and her own perspective on writing rather than like marketing her work itself. She's sharing fan art. They're just not that active and they don't really spend much time. I'm assuming it's because they're busy writing the next best novel. But it is interesting to look at huge social media stars on Instagram and TikTok if they're writers and see what the content is. And it very much isn't what like you and I are doing, where we're putting up a reviews and doing this. So there is like a it is a noticeable difference, I think, between a homegrown social media following to publish, you know, self-publish versus a traditionally published author and their presence online.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I noticed the same thing. Mostly on Instagram, I follow a lot of traditionally published authors on Instagram, and yeah, not very much marketing from like themselves on their social media accounts as far as their books go, versus the indie space where I feel like that's a lot more common because you're your own marketing team, so you have to. But yeah, no, I think that was an excellent answer to Mandy's question. So I can go on to her next question, and
I don't even think she's in here, which sucks.
I
I'm like,
know,
Mandy, no,
but
come back. We're
I'm in a
answering your question.
Discord with her, so I'll send this episode to her after.
Nice.
So she will definitely see it. I'll make sure
Sounds
she
good.
does. But her second question was, do you think finding a good agent is make or break? So I'm gonna let you speak on this first again because you have experience, even if it's not a lot, whatever, I'm not sure how extensive it is, but you have more experience than I do talking to agents, so I want you to go first.
And let it be known, I have very little experience. I
Okay.
went to this conference and have done my own like background research, so I'm not a professional in any sense of the word. Maybe we should have an agent or two on in the future
That
and
would be
ask
great.
them more questions. That would be really cool. Maybe I can reach out to the woman who's local to me and see if she'd be interested in talking.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
So the question, do you think finding a good agent is make or break? I don't think so. However, I think having an agent as a baby author, as a new author, is can be really helpful. I think if you look in the acknowledgments, usually of like the big authors that you really enjoy reading, they usually acknowledge their agent within the first paragraph, and I'm sure that's normal courtesy, right? Like that's what we do. But I've heard authors discuss like they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for their agent who pushed to have the book published. I don't think there's anything wrong with having someone on your side like that who understands the industry more than you, a newbie, ever would. And we're just talking about new authors, indie authors, self-published, going maybe into trad publishing. But I don't think it's a make or break. I think just like you having control over your own marketing and your own ability to publish in whatever way you want, there is a benefit to that versus an agent who's telling you, oh, this isn't what we do in the industry. I would not do that. Or, you know, trying to push you in a direction maybe you're not comfortable with only because it'll get you sold. So there's a plus and minus, but I definitely don't think it's a make or break. I think it's a good avenue to try. And if you find an agent that you love right off the bat, great. But I've also heard through research that it kind of sometimes takes a couple agents throughout your career to find overarching success. It's kind of like a therapist in that way, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to go through a few before you find the one that suits you best. So just from my own understanding, no, I don't think it's a make or break situation.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't really know a whole lot about the agent process. It's something I need to do more research on, but from my understanding, I would say it's just one of many factors that contributes to publishing. As far as like the make or break thing goes, I don't think if you have, not the best agent, that's going to be the determining factor that you're never going to get published. I think there's a lot more that goes into any creative work, especially writing and publishing. But like I said, I'm not really qualified to speak on agents, so I'm not going to go any further
And
into it.
also, it's interesting because I think a lot of people forget that agents make money off of your book success. So if you're not successful and your work is not successful, they are not getting a paycheck either.
It's a
And
good
so they're
motivator.
doing all the work on the back. Yeah, for sure. Like, and of course there are horrid agents out there, I know for a fact. But in the grand scheme of things, like, you know, as we see these, it was interesting is at the panel there was like one woman, Megan, at I think her name was Megan, if I'm remembering correctly. I hope I don't butcher that. And she was like kind of this like younger, fresher faced like woman. And it was interesting hearing her perspective on things versus some of the like the two older gentlemen and their experiences and their feedback. So yeah, I think it also depends on where you're going, like what you're wanting to accomplish. All of these factors are so specific and minute to the writer's needs that wholesale. You're not gonna lose out if you don't get an agent, and you're not gonna win if you do have one. And yeah, so anyway, those are my final comments.
All right. Well, Mandy, when I send this to you on Discord, I hope we answered. I hope we answered your questions. Real quick, I wanted to say about the indie release spotlight. I know we haven't done that for the past couple of weeks. We're going to be picking that back up in May. So if you have an indie release for the first week of May, because we're going to be doing it week by week, if you have a release that falls in that first week of May, let us know. We'll be sure to shout it out on, I believe, next week's episode, even though it'll technically be like the last day of April or something, because then the
Yeah,
following
it's
it'll
still
be the
May.
following week. So
Yeah, exactly.
and I'm sure we'll both put videos out to remind people to share their books with
Definitely.
us. But
Definitely.
that is all our podcast updates slash write-in questions, our very first ever write-in questions. Hopefully we get more of those. So we can move on to our indie publishing slash books discussion. We have some not so fun stories to talk about today, but
Important
they're
though.
important. Yeah, they're important things to talk about. So the first story we have here is involving book bans, which is a topic I kept meaning to actually bring up on the show, but I just didn't couldn't find like a real recent relevant story. I think this is a good one. So this is from CNN and Penn.org. The Big Five publishers have announced they will join a lawsuit originally filed in November by Penguin Random House, challenging an Iowa state law that bans certain books from school libraries. The law has previously been temporarily blocked for being staggeringly broad, which seems to be a common theme with these book bans. But yeah, I don't know if the law is still blocked while challenges played out. I couldn't find the exact details on that, but I thought, now's a good time for us to talk about book bans. I'm sure we're both on the same page with this, but Ash, what do you think about I think it's a big we hear about book bans all the time, but I think it's more relevant now that like the big five publishers are now all pushing back against it in a pretty significant way. So what are your thoughts on the publishers want joining this lawsuit, but I guess also book bans in general, since we haven't really talked about that. I'm sure your answer is not going to be a surprise to me or anybody, but I just want to give you a platform to share your thoughts.
Yeah, so I'll give a couple stats because that was my second follow-up link
That's right,
below yours.
you shared the follow-up, sorry.
Yeah, so before I kind of go into my own personal opinion, Penn America did like a study essentially about book bans, and they recorded more school book bans during the first 6 months of the 2023-2024 school year than all of the 2022-2023 school year, which is huge. That's, I mean, more moves to ban books than we've seen since this whole kind of conundrum started in 2021. So 4,349 instances of book bans have now occurred across 23 states and 52 public school districts. And apparently 9% of the books banned through June of 2023 included depictions of not so great topics such as like rape and sexual assault, but in the way that young adults can obviously learn from and find connection to if they have experienced it. And important to note that most of those books discussing those topics were written by women. So just some broad kind of general statistics. I included the link that I'm sure we will share as well. It's a really important study. But I think knowing those smaller statistics or smaller instances that these are books that not just touch on kind of sexual assault, but also LGBTQ plus issues, those are the books that are getting the most attention. Obviously, I'm anti-book ban. I think any type of ban wholesale, whether it be TikTok, whether it be books, whether it be music of any kind, even if it's the kind that you necessarily don't like, is just fundamentally against who we are as humanity, as humans. I think, we look at really important books of the 20th century, Margaret Atwood, 1984, books that turn the topics of oppression on their heads and make it very clear and at the forefront of what the reader is digesting, and it's exactly what's happening, right? If you cannot disseminate thought, what's the point? And coming at this from like a, I'm not a parent. I want that to be clear also. I do come from a very Catholic household, and I do have a 10-year-old sister who is trying to navigate this kind of new world also. And even though my parents are very conservative and are very, kind of right-leaning Catholics, they never told me what I could and couldn't read. And that fundamentally became the foundation of who I was. They rant at me about my beliefs and going to a liberal arts college, even though they were all gung ho for it in the past. But it was this type of open-mindedness that made me a super empathetic person, reading about different people's perspectives. And I think because I said I'm not a parent, but I am an older sibling, it's important to know what your kid is bringing home too, right? If there is something that you see the front cover of and you read the back and you go, I don't know if I agree with this, read it with them, right? Just understand what your child is consuming. I feel like half of these parents who speak at board meetings against books in general have zero idea on how to navigate their children's social media, what they're doing on Xbox, PS5, whatever. So there's a sense of entitlement that comes with this too. Like you want to ban what other people are reading, but like that's up to the parent. So obviously we can go on and on and on. Obviously very much disagree with this. I think even if you're going to pull out the most horrendous book known to man, that is a perspective that can bolster your own opinions that this thing is bad, right? I mean, that's what books are for. So, yeah, those are my thoughts very succinctly.
Well, no, thank you for sharing those follow-up stats, because I think they're important to know. Who's writing the books that are being banned, and then what topics are they dealing with? Because there's common themes there that are being, erased. But no, I think we're completely on the same page as far as book bans go. When I walk into a bookstore, I see a lot of books that I can tell push an agenda that I don't want to read. But at the same time, I wouldn't go up to the counter of that bookstore and say, you need to take those down. Like, at the end of the day, if I don't want to subject my eyes to reading that, I don't have to. And I think it's the same when it comes to parenting. I've always said, when it comes to movies and video games too, it's the parents' responsibility. Like, there's information out there. You can see whether this is something you want your kid exposed to. And yes, that's your decision as a parent. Obviously, I would say, depending on their age, you do need to let them explore and re like without too much restriction. But because, and I say that only because I was like you, I was raised, in a very religious household, but I was also never prevented from reading anything that my parents maybe disagreed with. They may have voiced a concern or something, but never like tried to take the book away from me or anything like that. So that's another thing I find baffling. It's like, I've never met someone who supports book bans. Like, it seems a
Me neither.
pretty cut and dry, almost like this is a vocal minority issue. And I wonder if it's there's just not enough of the opposition in these environments, probably because it's intimidating, right? Like, I think if you polled the majority of people, most of them would say freedom of speech, freedom of knowledge is important, whether you disagree with something or not. So yeah, 100% on the same page there. I don't support banning books in any way or any other form of media or anything really. Obviously, certain exceptions, but I think those are pretty self-explanatory. But
I want to follow up what you mentioned about, the vocal minority, because that's such an important piece of this entire debate and argument. Reads with Rachel here on TikTok. She shares when she goes to these board meetings and these open forums, and there are so many others who are doing the same, who are speaking out. But it's important to know that institutions and groups like Moms for Liberty have the funding for, they have the funding to be able to send these mothers to different school districts at times and places that most working parents, and let's be honest, most parents work, when at a time when most parents can't make these meetings. And those that can are met with changes in time last minute with all these other limitations that make it extremely difficult to dissent against what these people are doing. And they're also able to cross school districts and county lines and show up at meetings where their kids don't even go to those schools. So it's a very strategic game that they are playing that most average American parents cannot contend with without a larger group of people backing them as well. And I think that's what at least I see missing in a lot of the discussion is that we are not seeing enough of the voices dissenting against these groups. We're only seeing like the sound bites from the Moms of Liberty being like ridiculous, right? Like they're the ones on the news. They're the ones getting the viral TikToks, and that's a danger in of itself because
Yeah, for
the
sure.
mom showing up after a 12-hour shift and signs up to speak and then can't, she's not, they've inundated their whole group with people speaking out for book bannings. You know, it's a whole, anyway, it's a whole strategy. So there are people out there doing amazing work, especially librarian groups. But it feels like a losing battle right now because one group is extremely well funded and organized, and the other is just the average group of people trying to do the best for their kids. So it's an unfair game for sure.
No, that was a good point you mentioned about their kids don't even go to school in this district, but they still have a voice. And that reminded me of a story I saw. There was someone who didn't even have children who was sending petitions to ban books in schools. And so it was like, what is your stake in this at all? Like, so I feel like there needs to be some maybe rethinking of the rules on who's allowed to do what there,
Agreed.
but
Yeah.
And then it's also, I've noticed it happens not just in school libraries, but also some public libraries as well, which, not that I agree with the school libraries banning books either, but I think there's an argument to be made that there's a, that's kids and parents,
Sure, totally.
whether it's misguided or not, are trying to do what they think is best for their kids. Well, I completely disagree. Whereas what is the goal in banning a book from adults reading it? Like that ultimate that you can't justify that at all. Like while I struggle to see your justification for preventing a child from reading something, in certain scenarios I can understand a caution there. I can't when it comes to adults. Like ultimately an adult can read what they want and you should have no say in what another grown adult is reading, in my opinion. And I just, I don't
No,
understand
I
it.
fully agree. That's why I encourage anyone, you know, if you, which you should, even if you don't use your library, get a library card because those numbers are essential to their funding locally and nationally. But libraries need our help now more than ever. I volunteer an hour every other weekend and I go reshelve books. But it gives me a better insight into what my community is doing, the events that are hosted there. And so if there are any community events at your library that are discussing book banning, please show up. Please give these librarians your support because they're getting hate mail and they're getting calls and they're getting, I mean, it is an essential service that we have had since the founding of this country. I mean, libraries were one of the first institutions we had, and it's free. So, I mean, I don't understand and I won't get it. So support where you can. And if you're not a parent, still stay in tune to what's happening in your local school district. If there are open calls for discussion, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff you can do. So
Well, I think most of our audience will agree with us on that issue. Like I said,
hope so.
the only people I see in support of it are like the clips on TikTok and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's one of our not so fun topics to talk about today. This one is not as bad, but still a little cause for concern. So, HarperCollins is in talks with, sorry, my Things book. HarperCollins is in talks with 11 labs to use their text-to-speak technology to bolster their work in non-English language audiobooks. So I thought this one was interesting because I think it's a little more nuanced than some people might think at first glance. You know, obviously when it comes to AI taking the jobs from narrators, I'm not a fan of that. But I think when we take like specific use cases in which they're might not even be a narrator losing work at all, and which in like this situation, I'm mixing my thoughts together here, but
that's okay. No, that's fine.
I think what I was trying to get at was I'm not completely against using it in the situation or scenario where there's not somebody losing work over it. So like in some of these countries where there's not a large narrator base to choose from, like not many people scrambling to narrate your audiobook, or I had another scenario in mind but I lost it, but it seems to be that's kind of what they're getting at, like in these smaller markets where there's less money to be made and there's not really, you know, obviously in English we have a lot of narrators to choose from, just go on on BookTok and you'll see dozens of them, but I think in smaller cases like this it's a little more of a gray area. It's not so black and white where you can say, I don't want AI narrating my book. Yeah, I also don't want to rant too long without giving you an option.
Please continue.
That's really my thoughts. Like I'm okay with it if it's not taking the job, from a narrator. I think it has good applications, especially for people in non-English speaking countries, where there's less of a market and, you know, it's not as big of an industry. But what are your thoughts on HarperCollins using AI to narrate books right now? And I will add that caveat too. They say right now for cases like this, but you know how corporations are, sometimes you can't take them at their word, but
yeah. I read that article and then I found another that kind of is discussing the same thing. And apparently, let me see, there was a really interesting statistic at the beginning. It was something like the audiobook industry is projected to hit $33.5 billion by 2030. Which is up from around $4.2 billion in 2021. So that's a huge jump.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like a trigger pull too early to be using a tool when, if it's going to be that big of a market and projected to already be being that big in the near future, I mean, that's 6 years from now, where are these bigger companies putting their money? Not in people.
Yeah,
they could be hiring, they could be creating jobs that maybe aren't available, which is, while I understand the appeal of smaller countries or non-English speaking countries having a lack of, I think that's where you go, okay, there's a lack of a market here. Where can we, you know, put people? And so to me it still feels like, yeah, it feels like jumping the gun a little bit. What can creating a bigger audiobook narration market in a smaller country do for the local economy, right? Like, I feel like those are questions that no one's really asking, or maybe they are, and because AI is so new and it's so, like, such a big topic, they're not really talking about that, because I just can't help but think that HarperCollins has enough money to invest in local economy. You know what I mean?
I think they're like a small press.
Super small, very indie for sure. There was also like one interesting component too that I thought was interesting. It was how to use the voices of those who have died, who were excellent narrators in the past, to use in the future. And there was one family in particular, and I'm not even going to try and find it in this longer article, but who signed off on their deceased family's voice being used to generate AI audiobooks.
Yeah.
I feel like that is interesting, right? If there's someone who's already known to be a great narrator, like let's say Morgan Freeman's family in the future is like, when he does pass, is like, yep, no, to continue narrating, we would love for him to continue to be a voice, the voice of God, many think him as. But I feel like that is an interesting like side topic. These people have already passed along, their estates handle everything, but yeah, I'm just not a fan. I'm not a fan so early on. It's you still have to train these AIs in the non-English speaking languages. How are you doing that? Are you taking from things that were already existing? And therefore, if they already exist, then there already are people that are there to do that job.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, no, totally understand. I think you brought up an interesting point about people who have passed, but I want to ask the question because I play around with AI a lot. Not when I do use it for like certain things, I make sure I disclose it, but I just mean in my free time just to experiment because I think it's fun. But I visited I don't know if it was 11Labs specifically, but an AI voiceover site where the voices that are being like emulated or the AI is trained on have been licensed from those people. So it's like a narrator giving this website, obviously, permission to use their voice in their AI products. So naturally, there's got to be some sort of payment arrangement behind the scenes. Whether that's fair or not, I can't say because I haven't seen it, but I would
Yeah,
say
that's true.
I would hope it's a fair arrangement where the author or the narrator, whoever's providing the voice, is getting compensated fairly, and that, you know,
Yeah.
the company then in turn gets to use their work, their voice for their AI. So, how do you feel about someone who's still alive, maybe licensing out their voice? Maybe they don't have the time to narrate something, but they're like, yeah, you can use AI to clone my voice for this. What do you think about
Sure. No, so I think, is it the website Deep Zen? Is that the one you were
It's been a while, so I'm
referencing?
not entirely
Okay.
sure. That might be one of them, though. I know there's a lot, so.
Yeah, so that's one that does, this article says, somewhere in the world, Todd, Dahlia, and Alice are real people, and they earn royalties regardless of wherever their voices are being used. So I think that's a little bit more of a middle ground, right? If the artist chooses to have their voice licensed, and regardless of what the audio is used for, get royalties from it, I think that's a much more ethical way to go about it. It's when it's not that, right? When it's pulling from other places, or it's not giving the original artist their due that I have a problem
Absolutely.
with. So yeah, I mean, if there's like a understanding in the audio person or the audio narrator is like, yeah, like totally, if I can make royalties when I'm speaking, I don't, yeah, I think that's a much better middle ground than not.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think as long as it's something that the artist, in this case the narrator, is happy with, who am I to say no, that's not okay.
Well,
But
that's
no.
the whole point. That's the whole like argument about AI is that like most of the time it's learning from people that haven't agreed to be
Yeah,
learned
right.
from. And so if the people agree, then
Yeah,
hell
absolutely. No, I fully agree. Before we move on, any other thoughts on AI and audiobooks and narration that you wanted to share? Or do you think we're pretty good on that
I
topic?
think we've I think we're good. I think we're good. I think we did a good job.
Well, making sure not to skip it this week. I promise it wasn't intentional last week, but our work in progress check-ins. Looks like you
Do you want to go
had
first?
a yeah. What did you say?
Do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I usually make you go first, so let's go.
That's okay. This week is your turn.
Yeah, so I had a busy week. I didn't get as much writing done as I would wanted, even with my new routine. I still get my writing time in the morning.
Good.
But yeah, just busy week watching nephews, going to family events. I went to a Harry Potter orchestra concert. That was really fun.
Oh,
It
how is
was
that? Oh,
really
amazing.
good. And apparently they do, so it was for the first movie and they do it for all seven, I guess. So sorry to
Wow.
my wallet for all the tickets I'm gonna buy, but I went with my two younger siblings and my mom, and it was a great time.
That's amazing. That
But
sounds
that
fantastic.
took away a lot of my my writing time that I usually get on Saturday, so but it was well spent, so it's fine.
Worth it. Definitely.
But it looks like you've made some good progress despite also being busy with a 10K this weekend.
I did. I ran a 10K with my coworker and friend Casey. Last week was busy, busy, busy. It's always that's always the case. I don't know how people bust out books and as quickly as they do. I
Couldn't
just
be me.
I couldn't be me. I value my sleep. I value my social time. I do. I like I don't I have to have like
Yeah.
a solid 7, 8 hours. I can't just anyway, whatever.
No.
But I did make enough progress that I felt like okay. Got about 2,000 words for the anthology short story, which felt good. I'm really nervous about it. I don't want it to read boring, and I think that's what's holding me back from just going full send. So today I got on the whiteboard, and I think it's going to be broken out into three parts, each
Okay.
around 6,000 words, which is like less than 20,000. But yeah, feeling a little bit better about having more of like a okay, I know where to go. I got a couple paragraphs in for A Filthy Hunger. I'm just struggling there, but that's usually how it goes. Working more on a more consistent practice.
Yeah.
So yeah, not too bad, not too shabby.
If you don't mind me asking, I know you were struggling with was it chapter 7 of A Filthy Hunger?
Yeah,
Is it still that one giving you trouble?
it's still that
Yeah,
one.
it's
Yeah,
okay.
I have like a really, here's a tangent. I have a really hard time. I'm not okay. I think I'm a smart person, but my fear of sounding dumb and unintelligent when it comes to like politics
Yeah.
is holding me back because I have my male main character who's supposed to be a spy master, but then suddenly he is thrown off because things shift. And so he doesn't know all. So I'm struggling with his, which is probably a good thing, but struggling with his identity as someone who is seeing himself in a new game that is unfolding and he doesn't know how to proceed because he's hated by everyone but has to be in this role. So, yeah, I'm just struggling with the politics of espionage. And I am not a spy,
Understandable.
so I'm finding this really challenging.
Yeah.
But we'll get through it. We'll get through it. Still chapter fucking 7. Once I get through this chapter, I honest to God will probably fly through the next 10 because I know where it's supposed to go. But
Yeah.
like this chapter is just really kicking my ass and I can't move on before I finish. I cannot jump around. That's
Yeah.
just not someone
I can't jump around too
I
much
am.
either. I just, because then I'm worried I'm going to need to go back and rewrite. And
Yeah.
also, I like what you
You get
said
it.
about, like, you know, you're a smart person, but you're worried about sounding dumb. I feel that all the time, both in writing, but also I feel like in speaking more, because I'm better at written communication because I can sit there and I can think about what I say and I can type something and be like,
100%.
that doesn't look right. That's not what I'm trying to say. But when I'm talking, especially on the podcast, sometimes I'll say something and I'll be like, that's not good. But
No, I think we're doing just fine. Especially at the end of a long day, we both work pretty, like, I don't know, it takes a lot out of us, right? We're using our
Yeah, for
brains. Not
sure.
that people don't, but like some people have jobs that are a little bit easier than ours. So
Yeah.
giving ourselves our laurels where we can, but oh my God, yeah. I guess I need to read some spy novels slash watch a couple spy documentaries. I
Yeah.
don't know.
It's hard when it's something
Oh.
you can't like experience. Like, okay, no one can experience being a spy master right now. So like, what do you draw from for that? You kind of just have to make it up, right? And make it
Yeah,
sound
you
convincing.
do.
So that's the hard part.
Yeah. It is. And I have to remember it'll go through edits, it'll go through revisions. And just like Neil Gaiman says, the first draft never looks anything like the final draft that goes to publication. So
Yeah.
I keep telling myself I need to tell myself this more often. And then I tell myself, but I'm like, I'm different. It's gonna be perfect when I write it. So I just have these hurdles I have to get over.
Yeah,
Well,
I'm the same way with my first draft. I'm like, but I want this draft to be perfect. This
this draft has to
one.
be no edits, no
Yeah.
criticism. Everything is perfect. Yeah.
All right, well, there is our work in progress check-in. Slow but steady progress as
Yeah.
always, I feel like,
Slow
which
but
is a good
steady.
thing.
Yep.
Onto our weekly writing topics. This might be where I snuck one in before you could see it. But Hopefully I don't surprise you too much with it. So
Oh, okay.
starting with the first one, perspective and slash points of view. So I wanted to dive into this a little bit because I thought it would be interesting to see if we
Fun.
how we both explore choosing perspectives and how we write them and things like that. Because I know
Yeah.
it's something that varies from author to author. So I guess the first question I'll start with is, how do you choose what character perspectives to write from? And from what I understand about A Filthy Hunger, you are writing from at least two, correct? Three.
But
Okay.
yes, the main, yes, I'll get into that. But yes.
Okay. Well, how do you decide? So I know it's different for everyone, but do the characters come to you first and like the ad and you know their perspective, they're going to be POV characters, or does it is it different for depending on what you're writing? I guess I'll rephrase the first question. How do you choose what perspectives to write from so I don't ramble too much there?
No, that's, I think that's like that's a great question. So I love multiple points of view novels. I think that's why I like V.E. Schwab so much, or at least her Shades of Magic series, is because it is multiple points of view. I think just like any situation, you can have someone experience the same moment, but they're gonna see it and understand it very differently. And I think that can be a really great tool in a story to have that occur. For A Filthy Hunger, it started off just with Kara's perspective, but I felt so much more connected to Voltaire, which is the second point of view that I have. He's more like me than she is, even though she shares similarities. But I feel like I couldn't tell the story in my gut when I started to write it, fully and like dedicate myself to this thing. A couple of years ago, it felt unnatural to just have it from one perspective. And for a high fantasy series written by a woman, I don't think I've really seen that as often. I can't really think of anything off the cuff that has like multiple points of view high fantasy written by one of, and that's just my failure in not being as well read. So please, if you know in the comments, give me the recommendations because I would love this. I would say like the closest would be like Samantha Shannon's Priory of the Orange Tree. It kind of covers a few different perspectives. So that is the closest recently. Yeah, it was just a gut reaction. I had to write it from both of their perspectives. There are two individuals who hate the opposition, and so I found that to be the most compelling, is to have both sides, and how they view each other and how they eventually come to be allies. And then more than that, I threw in a third because I also feel like it's important to have the big bad have a voice as well. So in each book, the first book, it's all the high cleric's point of view gets thrown in every five chapters. So you get to kind of get a background info about like what the bad person is doing. And I also find that really compelling because no one likes to know what's going on with the enemy. It's just the enemy. But if you hear their perspective, sometimes you're like, they make a compelling case into how they are behaving. So yeah, the long short of it is that it's just gut. It's just how does the story have to come out? And I tried it one way and it wasn't working. So then I said, two points of view.
That's all great points. I think I'm kind of in a similar boat to you where I started writing from one with A Knight of Knives, and I've talked about my struggles with Act Two, and I've started to explore writing from a different character's perspective and putting that into Act One, and it's helping me with a lot of the plot issues that I was having, even with my outline, just
Good.
like this guy's got to be in all of these places. Like, can I make someone else do this? And it's working really well. And I like having the second character's perspective because of her relationship. I don't want to say who it is yet, just in case I end up scrapping it. But
Sure.
no, I like having her perspective. I think I'm going to keep it because she has a really deep relationship with the first POV, and it's a very complex, tumultuous relationship. So, I think it's important to explore her side of that, not just Theron, who is the main character, not just his, because I feel like with any relationship, it's important to understand both sides, especially when there's issues. But and I also liked your point about you feel like the big bad should always have like a voice. That's something I've always felt too. Like I like there to be an antagonist perspective of some kind, whether I'm reading or writing. I just think it makes the conflict more compelling. And like you said, sometimes it not sometimes it always fleshes out the antagonist more, because now they're not just a 2D
Yeah,
caricature
definitely.
of evil as maybe the protagonist sees them, but now they're a fully developed character with their own near in their head. And yeah, I really like exploring both sides of a conflict like that. I can't do it, so I can't do that in book one, because book one's a murder mystery. So I don't know how I
Oh,
do
I
that
see.
without spoiling a lot right from the get-go. I might be able to
Oh,
throw in.
interesting.
I've still been thinking about if I could like throw it into Act Three somehow, but I also don't want it to be like jarring where there's like a new POV in Act Three and then it goes.
Sure.
Definitely, we'll be adding after there are revelations. There will be another perspective thrown in there. But I don't know that that's gonna happen in book one, because I have really struggled to figure out how to do that logistically without spoiling who,
Yeah.
like, for example, who the killer is and things like that. So,
Sure. Yeah, that
because
is challenging. Yeah, I don't know how you do that without.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's a hard, but it's hard because it's like, but I that's something, like you said, like I really like in my stories.
Yeah.
So it's like, but I might just have to wait till the second book to do it, because
Here's a follow-up question because you mentioned that the second point of view you've kind of explored recently writing is from a female perspective. And I've seen a lot of TikToks from female or female presenting readers that they hate when they get a female point of view written by a man. And I personally have seen that done really well in a fantasy setting, right? It's not, and I want to make that clear too. You and I usually just talk about fantasy. I feel like sometimes, yeah, sure, you're just kind of like an eye roll here and there. You're like, obviously, this is written by a man. But more often than not, I feel like at least the male authors that I write genuinely take like a really good, take Brandon Sanderson, for example, a good, I don't know, take on it. So do you find it challenging to write from a female perspective? Because sometimes I find it challenging to write from a very harsh male perspective.
Yeah, no, definitely, 100%. I'm always conscious of that. I'm a man writing a female perspective thing. So,
Sure.
one, I mean, I don't think I would, but I don't ever want to end up on that subreddit that's full of just really bad examples of men writing women. But I
Not
don't.
the
Yeah, no.
Reddit.
So I think one thing that'll help me, one, avoid a lot of the common pitfalls there is this character's not really sexualized. There's a little bit too much of everything else going on for a lot of my characters to care about that right now. It's just it. There's like I don't shy away from the fact that that stuff exists in my world, obviously, but it's just not at the forefront of my characters' plots right now. It's just not something I had much room for, and really didn't feel it was necessary to any of their character development or the plot.
Yeah,
That said, there
that's
are like
interesting.
so there's not like on page spice or anything. It obviously sex exists in my world. Like it's not, they don't reproduce asexually or anything, but
A good distinction to have.
yeah,
We
no.
don't produce
So like
asexually.
there will be, it definitely plays a role into
Sure.
certain societal issues, but no, I think obviously knowing that she's not really sexualized in any way helps. So also, I like to think that, and I don't, again, I'm not trying to approach it like with too much confidence, but I did grow up with four sisters and a single mother for a long time, and so I was very surrounded by female perspectives,
Yeah,
and
that'll do it.
very much taught to, and thankfully so, to respect women as human beings like they deserve to be.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's weird to say that because it's like that's such an obvious thing, but it feels like when you read female perspectives from some male authors, it's like no,
Yeah.
that's not how female brains work.
Right. Yeah. But I also think it's a really, you prove a good point is that like we can very much understand someone else's experience through living side by side with them, right? Like you having so many sisters and a single mom, like that is in of itself a whole crash course of a lifetime in the female experience. Maybe not obviously from
Oh yeah, for sure.
your own perspective, but while I do understand a lot of the well thought out criticisms on Book Talk about that, I do think that it is a little unfair to say that men can't write women because when that argument comes up, I do find it's kind of just like, well, yeah, women do go through a lot of very unique, singular things, right? But also, we are just normal people too. Like, we don't need to be held on this pedestal all the time. Like, human experience is just a human experience sometimes. So, I don't know. Sometimes that irks me or rubs me the wrong way when it's like, oh, if it's written by a man and it's a woman's perspective, or well, I can't read it. And completely respecting that that's someone's prerogative to read or not read. But I think
Sorry.
classic.
Yep, every time.
I think we do a disservice to authors and understanding that authors have a craft, right? Like that's the magic of writing is that there is no place called Middle Earth, and yet when we read it, we're there. And so I don't know. I just sometimes I'm kind of like, yeah, it doesn't matter to me. But anyway, I just want to get your perspective, and I think that's a great perspective.
No, I appreciate that that you're not immediately dismissive of a male author writing a female perspective. I'm the same, I think of it like, well, would I be dismissive of a female author writing a male perspective just because she's female? Like, no, I wouldn't.
No.
Even if you haven't lived that experience, I think you can still write about it with the proper, respect and, educating yourself on the unique struggles and experiences of different people. Kind of like we touched on in a little bit in our talk on diversity, I think. But I think specifically when it comes to gender, you don't really want to limit yourself to just writing one, because I don't know. I feel like that would just make for a much less interesting story for any of the stories that I want to write anyway.
Also, I feel like you'd get criticized for being too like tone deaf,
That too,
right? Like
right? Like,
regardless of what you do, someone's gonna find fault with it. So as long as it's done with respect and understanding, like yeah, write that female perspective, especially if it's in a
absolutely.
fantasy setting. Like I saw a TikTok the other day. It was like what fantasy authors forget to do is include like female reproductive cycle stuff, like periods in their story. And I was like, fuck, I forgot to put that in mine. And I am a female author with a cycle. Like you just don't for like you just forget, that there are these things. And it's just like, oh yeah, even women forget that they I don't know. It's just stuff like that that you're kind of like, okay, not everything needs to be represented. I don't know.
I was gonna say, I think when it comes to something like that, like we don't need to represent every single like daily bodily function that people go through, or monthly, but
Moon cycles or whatever they are in a fantasy setting.
yeah,
Yeah, for
right.
sure.
I've definitely seen that thrown around, but I was just gonna say, to answer the same question I posed to you, when I choose perspectives, it was following up on the gender thing. When I choose perspectives, I like to choose characters that feel different from like the other perspectives. So I don't want three male warrior perspectives that all share the same upbringing and social background. That's boring to me. Like, I want the male perspective with this background, and then I want the female perspective with a totally different background, and then I want the antagonist, whatever gender they are. Whenever I'm choosing or thinking about adding a new POV. It's just, what do they bring to the table that I don't already have? And how, and also, do I think I can accurately and like respectfully represent this group or culture or whatever they're, you know, they're drawing from? But yeah, those are my thoughts on perspective. I think I actually had some follow-ups that we might have already touched on.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, when it comes to POVs in reading or writing, do you have like, are you very, are you more towards the short side or the longer side, or you don't really care? I think you mentioned you like a lot of POVs, right?
I do.
Yeah.
I,
Define a lot.
yeah. So I think a solid three is
Okay.
like where I'm at, which is why I have like two solid throughout and then a third kind of thrown in every strategically every five chapters. That'll
Yeah.
be the clerics. I think the one thing I really did enjoy and then also ended up disliking as well, just going back to our conversation last week about G.R.R. Martin,
Yeah.
is that he does have a lot of perspectives, and it is fun to get an Easter egg of what's going to happen to one character when another kind of stumbles upon something that, you know, is going to affect the other. I think too many cooks in the kitchen can be very overwhelming and difficult to get through, but I've genuinely always really enjoyed the variety of characters. I, as much as I do love a singular perspective, there's just something about having a whole cast of characters that I don't know. It's a fave. So I, not too many, not too few. I think a three is a solid mix for me. Yeah.
Yeah,
What about you? Do you like a
I like a lot of perspectives. To me, the more the better, but so the only author I've ever seen do more than like six is Martin. So it's hard for me to say, like I find it hard to believe that I would find it hard to believe before I read Martin that someone could write 20 freaking perspectives and I could keep track of all of them, but somehow I can when I read it. That said, I would still be really cautious if someone handed me a book and said, "Oh, by the way, there's 20 POV characters in this book." I'd, oh, okay. But yeah, I think that's definitely erring on too many. He's Martin, and so I'll forgive him for it. But
I think the one, what, I don't know if you're going to say this, I'm going to jump in and add to this though. I think the one downside is not necessarily my worry that the author can't thread all of those threads together and create a cohesive plot, which I think scares a lot of people and they do realize it's a multi-point of view novel. But it's the fact that like I will forget what happened if I have six chapters in between one character and then they come back. I've forgotten what they've done in the last chapter. Especially if you take multiple days to read a book, which most people do, right? So I think that is the one downside to too many points of view, is that you lose the reader and then the reader's having to be like, what's my spark notes of last chapters of what this character's chapter? I don't remember. So
Yeah,
yeah, I
for
just wanted to
sure.
throw that
So
in there too.
actually that not related to perspective, but I have another question. Are you someone who struggles to read like, 'cause it sounds like you read multiple books at the same time, but do you have like
I do.
limits on how many books you can read without starting to forget? 'Cause obviously everyone has a limit, but like
Yeah, of
at
course.
what point are you reading so many books you're like, okay, I need to stop because I'm forgetting stuff?
I just never experienced that problem. I and not in like a cocky in a cocky way. I usually limit myself to four at a time. And because they're all different variants on a genre, I don't really have trouble remembering. Now, if I put a book down and I'm focused on the other three way longer and I finish those, I might have to be like, oh fuck, what's happening in this book? Okay. But it's usually time that does that rather than my own mind. I saw a TikTok the other day that was like people who put their bookmark in the middle of a chapter without finishing the chapter before they end for the night are like psychopaths. And I do that literally all the time. And but I can jump back in and just like I read a sentence, I'm like, oh yeah, that's where we are. So I don't, yeah. Do you have the problem? I don't think I've ever asked
No,
this of
actually,
another
that's
person
I was
before.
asking 'cause the when you said the issue or the concern you have with multiple POVs is forgetting, so I wanted to follow that up with, do you have that problem with multiple books? No, I don't have that problem with multiple books either. I can read five at a time, which I don't recommend, by the way, because your progress looks like crap when you're like you have bookmarks in
Definitely.
like at the beginning of all five books and it's like you're never gonna finish it.
Yeah.
But no, I can pick any one of those five books up and pretty, I mean, I won't remember every little detail, but I'll after I
Yeah.
get back into it, I'll be like, okay, this is where we are. So
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think I've ever tried to read more than five at once because that's just too much work, not because
Too
of the
much.
memory. I'm sure at a certain point my memory would not cooperate
Yeah.
either, but no, I know some
It
people
took.
say they can't read more than like one or two, and I've just, yeah, I've never
Yeah,
had that
which is
problem.
understandable.
Yeah,
Yeah,
definitely.
no, I also get that. I think what I mean by like when I am only talking about GRR for a
Yeah.
second, like it took me so long to get through those books as I was reading other books that by the time I made it to like Catelyn's chapter after seven other chapters in between, and I've also read a few, I'm like, what happened again? So it is, my own doing for sure. But I do feel like for people who are not us, who are not people who can just pick up and throw away and then pick up again down the line, it poses a challenge
Yeah,
to like,
definitely.
oh, yeah, what is, yeah, what happened?
I don't,
Good
I
questions,
think
though.
you answered, but I just wanted to make sure. When it comes to POV counts in your writing, you like a lot of those as well, right? I know you said you like a lot in
Yeah.
reading, but okay, cool. Yeah. I have a bigger project that I'm not ready to talk about, but when one day when I finish A Knight of Knives and the sequel, I have another one that I think will have at least six POVs, which is daunting to me, but
That's insane.
I'm not gonna do a Martin where I like constantly double it, but no, it'll be
Okay.
there's it's six POVs that I have planned for that one.
Holy cow, that's huge.
Yeah,
Do you have
it's
like a board like the Pepe Sylvia in Always Sunny scene where you're like, Pepe Sylvia, and then you have like all the
No,
stuff?
but I've thought of doing like because I the way I have that story outlined right now, I don't even have the whole thing outlined. It's just something I know I've been wanting to write for like years, even before A Knight of Knives. And I've had the characters in mind for a long time, and Act One has been pretty much set in stone for like over a year at this point. So the way I have it outlined is just a Word doc, and it's not very organized at all. But I definitely need to come up with a way to like track these characters' movements and
Yeah.
what they're doing, because six feels like a lot to me. So also, I don't know how Martin keeps track of all his, because six feels like too much work for me. And
Yeah.
I try not to
Well, you've
work on
got, I
that.
believe in you.
Thank you. I try not to
I
work on
do.
that project too much, but sometimes when I need a break from A Knight of Knives, I go over to that one.
Yeah, I feel that. That is a lot.
Well, one last question for perspective. Reading and writing. I can't believe I don't know this yet, but is A Filthy Hunger first or third person?
It is third.
Okay, I thought so, since usually when people do multiple POVs, it's in third, but I wasn't sure. So do you prefer third in your reading as well, or do you not really have a
I do.
preference? Okay.
I mean, I don't. I mean, I'm gonna pick up a book if I
Yeah.
like the premise and it looks pretty on the cover. I don't know if you have a preference either. I'm assuming third person is your preferred.
Yeah, third is my preferred.
Yeah.
I will probably never write in first. I might
Yeah.
try it, but I've tried before though, and it ends up being really like monotone and boring when I try it, and I have to like consciously think about making it not like that when I don't have to do that with third person. So I would just prefer to write in third person. And for my reading,
Yeah.
like you said, I mean, I'll pick up anything and read it if it sounds interesting, but I do prefer the third.
Yeah. I don't understand the hate. I think like this has come up, and I made a video like a couple weeks ago of like give me your hot takes, and a bunch of people like made theirs in the comments, and I loved it. And one of them was the argument over first or third person. So I guess
Really?
there's been an argument on Book Talk that I have not been privy to
Okay.
about whether or not first or third is superior. I don't generally really care if I, like
Yeah.
I said, if it is a book that I want to write or read, I'll pick it up and read it anyway. But I do think that there are limitations to first person that if you are not as, this is going to sound bad, and I don't mean this for the new burgeoning indie authors, but I do feel like unless you are someone with a lot of practice in third person who can do it well, it can go awry very quickly.
Yeah. Sorry, did you say third
I
or
think it
first person?
first, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, that's
First
okay.
person.
I just wasn't sure.
If you, yeah, I think first person takes a really intense amount of skill to do well enough that it doesn't sound self-fulfilling or,
Yeah, that's too
yeah, annoying. I know
right.
that sounds mean, and I've read them. I've read plenty that I've just like forgotten that it's in the first person, and I'm like, oh, I'm along for this ride, no
Yeah.
problem. But I think there's a lot of, and maybe that's why most authors prefer third person, is there's a lot of leniency that comes with third person. You can kind of pull things in versus, yeah, first you're very much narrowed by perspective. So, yeah. No hate. No hate to the first person authors out there, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, I just don't have the skill to write in it. this should be a pretty quick one. I know we're getting close to the end here, but I just threw this in last minute because I thought it would, we needed more topics, but looks like we didn't really need that much more. But yeah, so music. I was thinking about this because I was looking through my writing playlists, and I was curious, does music play a factor in your inspiration or in your writing process? Like when you're sitting down to write, do you have something going in the background?
Always.
Always.
Even if I read, I have to set up the music to fit the scene.
Same.
I'm very much like a mood, like we've talked about this, we're both mood readers. So it has to absolutely fit like with what I'm writing.
Yeah.
So I do have like a Filthy Hunger playlist, but it's not usually one I put on when I'm writing. I tend to do I actually tend to do like the Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, show score when
Yeah.
I read or write fantasy. I also do a lot of Heilung, which is like Nordic kind of music when I'm writing one perspective, and just kind of like general like folk, like very deep Nordic folk stuff. But also, yeah, like a lot of classical, like kind of gothic classical to both read and write to. But yeah, it's essential. Like if I'm writing a scene in a tavern or a bar, I've got to switch up the tone of the
Yeah.
music. It can't just be that. You know what I mean? And it helps. I feel like it immerses me way more in my writing process, and I get lost more in the reading if I'm reading instead than not having it. I can't do silence. I don't know what that says about me. There's probably some science behind that, but I don't know, it just immerses me more than not. So sounds
Yeah.
like you're very similar.
Very much the same. I need the music to match the tone of the scene I'm trying to write. And I haven't always done this, but lately I've been putting it on when I read in the mornings with my new routine, and I feel like it helps me read more pages. I don't know why, but it just feels like I think I just get more immersed in the reading and I read faster. And but yeah, I've been listening more as I read. Now, I'm sure you will say the same thing, but I have to ask, anything with lyrics or strictly instrumental?
No, it doesn't have to be strictly instrumental. I'm
Okay.
not someone who gets lost. I don't have ADHD or any type of like I don't have anything like that, which is,
Yeah.
some people have issues with lyrics. If I get lost in the writing or the reading, I tend to forget that people are singing in the background. It doesn't distract me like that. It just has to be the right aesthetic overall. Yeah. Unless I'm in the mood to sing, and then I'm like, well, I can't read because I want to sing Gilly's lyrics.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, lyrics don't bother me.
Yeah. I think until recently I was scared to listen to music with lyrics just because I had like while I'm writing, not just in general, but
Don't like music with lyrics at all.
yeah.
No.
No, because I do have ADHD and I was like, I'm just gonna start writing when I'm hearing, but no, that actually has
Yeah.
that hasn't been the case. So it's broadening my playlist a little bit, which is
Good.
nice.
That's great.
But
It also depends on volume. I have to keep it at a volume that's like not too high.
Oh,
I
yeah.
also found like after this, I'm gonna go read for a bit to just like decompress. I've been putting on like scenes, landscapes, aesthetic videos on YouTube and then muting them. So it's like you're in a cozy fantasy library or
Oh,
whatever,
that's
and it's
cool.
like a, 3D, like AI'd CG, whatever.
Yeah.
They're like really popular. And I put that on and I light a candle and I make a whole big deal out of it.
Ooh.
And that seems to help like the longevity of a reading process versus
Yeah.
just like sitting and reading, really quickly. So.
I might need to try that. I haven't really set like the atmosphere, but I might try that tomorrow. I
Great.
might try that tomorrow morning when I read.
Yeah, it's
That's
like a
some.
bath. You like set your bath and get your stuff ready to go. It just
Yeah.
makes you more excited. I'll send you some
Well, before we wrap up, something that
Yeah.
I think we skipped last week because
We
we were
did
a
on
little, I
accident.
think we got into our topics, we were a little into the discussion,
We
but
did.
our weekly writing resource. So we had some fun ones to share. I will let you go first because my dog is being weird. But what is your weekly writing resource for last week slash this week?
My weekly writing resource is called the Authors Guild, and that is a website, and it is an excellent holistic resource for everything author writer, specifically on newer topics. For an example, they have an entire AI best practices for author guide that is free, as well as other helpful posts on book banning, contracts, antitrust law. It seems to be just kind of a general library for anything author. Very good search engine, just like Google for the most part. It does have a members only option for certain posts and guides. I did not look into what the membership cost looks like, but because it is a guild, it makes sense that it might be on like the lower end side. But it seems to be a really great resource to just start off learning new topics, a good place to kind of bounce off from. So yeah, that is mine. The Authors Guild.
Very nice. I save all your resources so I remember to check them out later, and then
Same.
unfortunately I forget a lot of the times, but one day I'll go through and check them all
It's
out and put them
okay.
like in my bookmarks.
We're busy.
Mine's a
We're
bit of
busy
a
people.
yeah. My resource is a bit of a safe one. A lot of you have probably heard of it, but if you're like me and you didn't hear about it until a couple months ago, mine's Readzy, which is something that, like I said, a lot of you probably know, but it's a good source for tips on writing, publishing, querying, and things like that. It also has tools to track things like your writing progress. You can find potential editors and cover designers and things like that on there, and they also have a blog. So it might actually, it sounds kind of similar to Authors Guild, but maybe not the
It
same.
does. Yeah.
So we got
Different enough. Different
two
enough.
one-stop shops for you guys, if that makes sense, for just great advice and industry insights all around. So hope you like those resources. And again, once I get these videos up on YouTube, once I figure that out, I will have these all in the links there. But also feel free to message me if you ever want me to
Same.
share the link that way. I don't know if anyone's in the chat right
No,
now.
ma'am.
Looks like it's just us. Oh, is that I forgot her name, but our guest,
Mira.
Mira.
Yes, she's being. No, that's right. She actually, we
Mira.
have a dog trainer now,
Yeah.
Mira. We have a dog trainer now, and she's a chronic whiner because she knows it gets on my nerves. So the last couple of weeks we have not here. We have like 8 or 7 minutes now, so we can just ramble, I guess, for a while. No. Anyway, if you hear her whining, it's practice. Practice for me as a human being more patient.
Gotcha. Well, I was looking at the end of the doc. Did you have any closing thoughts you wanted to share?
No, I think we covered it all.
I think
I
so.
think this is the first time we've been early, I
It
think, like
is.
7 by 7 minutes, which is
Yeah.
impressive. We're always exactly on time, which I very much value.
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's no one in the chat, I don't think there's any discussion. I guess maybe for anyone who is listening, I think we say this at the beginning of every episode, but like any suggestions, any comments or concerns or things you just want to talk about? I feel like here's a bit of a rant recently, I guess, and we can maybe pull this into next episode. My brother and I had a good discussion about it too. I feel like there's a lot of division always on any social media, but recently book talk has become very kind of divided on a lot of topics. And I always wonder what it feels like because I feel like I'm always by myself in that I don't know a lot about a lot of things, and so I don't feel compelled to speak on them. And so One of the bigger ones was like problematic authors. You know, some groups of people find some authors problematic, others do not. Whether or not an author is required to speak on political issues, should they have a public stance on issues? So yeah, I think that's like maybe a topic for next week that we discuss. Just kind of generally, it feels like a very taboo topic. Also, someone just started mowing our lawn. Sorry if you hear that.
That's okay.
Yeah, I feel like that would be my topic choice for next week if no one has any comments.
Yeah, I think that's a great
Because
one.
I feel very lonely. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I feel conflicted. I really like to know a lot of stuff. So
Yeah.
maybe we talk about that.
I wonder, I think we might be sharing some of the same feelings about a particular topic because I've felt conflicted about some things that have come up on Book Talk recently that you just touched on. But also haven't spoken on them. So yeah, that'll be fun to talk about next week.
Get a safe space.
Also I did want to reiterate your point on the feedback. Please, whether it's on a podcast platform, whether you are with you have me on Discord or wherever, if you have any feedback for the show or any suggestions or topics you want to hear us cover, please let me know. We are more than happy to answer your questions and to cover your suggested topics. And also, I think Ash and I are going to talk about different segments for the show and also the future of what happens to TikTok in the coming months and things like that. But we'll figure those things out and get the
Definitely.
details to everybody. But it looks like we finished early this week, so I think
We did.
you can go enjoy your mood reading.
My mood reading.
Yeah. But as always, thanks for hosting, Ash, and I will see you next week.
Sounds good. Bye, Brandon.
Bye.